best Kiwi event in New Zealand, this.
Crossing New Zealand in 1 or 2 days.
Why do I do it?
Because I love it.
3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome to the Kathmandu Coast to Coast podcast. This podcast is dedicated to helping you get from New Zealand's west coast of the South Island to the east coast by running, biking and kayaking your way across some of the amazing landscapes. This podcast is brought to you by Team CP, your endurance coaching specialist. I'm Angus Petrie.
And I'm Richard Greer. In this podcast series, we're going to share training advice from specialists, insights from past athletes, and generally aim to help you achieve all of your goals from the start to the finish line of the Kathmandu Coast to Coast.
Welcome back again, Richard.
Episode 6.
Episode 6, crikey.
We're getting old here.
Time's going fast, isn't it? I don't know, how far through are we? Are we 3/4 of the way through our episode series?
I'm not sure exactly. Do we know actually where the finish line is?
Well, no, I can't say I do, but I tell you what I do know, Richard, is I know exactly where the Kathmandu Coast to Coast finish line is.
Isn't that good, eh? We know where the hard bits are, we know where the easy bits are, maybe even know where the tailwind's going to happen as well, is that right?
If you can organise the tailwind, you will be world famous.
Yeah, well, definitely hoping for it or planning on it.
Oh, yep. Good. Well, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who will have your name in the back of their head when they're bashing their headwind on that final straight to the beach.
Loving every minute of it as well. Exactly. What are we talking about today?
Oh, well, this episode, Rich, what are we going to do? We're going to jump back into our race updates, our progression.
Yep. Through the race. So we're at the kayak transition, aren't we? Getting in the river. So we're getting well through the course now. And then also Steve Gurney.
Steve Gurney. Have we been looking forward to Steve? Like, you know, 9-time winner, absolute true legend.
Ambassador for the race. Just lives and breathes it. It's a key part of his life, I guess. So he's always got some really interesting stuff to say and knows the race inside out, back to front, from a whole lots of different angles as well.
And as much, Richard, as I like to hear your babble and you like to hear my babble, we should probably move on. We
probably should.
Let's go back into the race and catch up at the bridge.
3, 2, 1.
I'm looking, I've come down the hill, I'm in my shoes, I'm looking, what am I looking for?
Enthusiastic, and the support crew are looking for you as well. You're looking for your support crew, aren't you? Down by the river, hanging out with them. So there's two parts to this. Obviously there's a 2-day transition and a longer stay transition. They're a little bit different. The longer stay transition, you actually run down the hill with your support crew. One person's allowed to do that. Support crew for the 2-day, they're not allowed to run down the hill, so they have to be waiting for you, anxiously sort of hoping that you're going to arrive sometime soon, please.
Yeah. So in the 2-day thing there, we pick up our support crew. My idea here is just not to be even looking about the boat. Don't try and pick my own boat out. Just follow my support crew. Just head down, follow my support crew, and they'll take me there.
They know exactly where it is, exactly. And it's early in the morning, and there's boats everywhere. There's heaps of boats going on. So just take your time across those rocks. Get there. Support crew the same. There's a lot of enthusiasm going on. They've been drinking coffee since sort of before dawn, eating bacon sandwiches and things down there. So they're keen as and excited for you. So take your time. Get to your boat in one piece, and then get dressed. Again, not rushing, get yourself sorted properly.
And potentially have a plan A and a plan B in the dress code there that you'll have sorted out beforehand, weather dependent, obviously.
Yes.
So maybe have some extra polypro or something or whatever handy. I guess you're going to have a set gear. You need a spray deck and you need a life vest and you need all of those things.
Yep, so you have your compulsory gear in your boat, but you might decide to actually put other stuff on and not get into that. So I guess there are options in terms of what the weather's doing and whether I feel like I need to do that. So that could be a choice to make before you get into your boat as a 2-day athlete.
And a bit of luck, you'll have maybe done a bit of paddling before you get here.
Hopefully.
So you'll know what you like, how much body heat you naturally generate yourself and all those sort of things, because it's a long time to sit in the kayak and it's not the easiest thing to just pull over and change a layer of clothing once you've set off.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So it is cold in the morning. It's early. It's up in the mountains. And the day's probably going to heat up because you'll be going to be paddling through lunchtime and things like that as well. So I guess that's just decision making around what clothing you're going to wear. So get yourself dressed quickly and efficiently and then take your boat to the side of the river. You can't do it until you're dressed, because otherwise we have 40 boats lined up with nobody sitting in them.
So that's actually a rule though, isn't it, that you can't have your boat, that you need to be fully dressed and walk
before
with
you can move
with it.
Yep, that's right. So you help your support crew take your boat down and then you're good to go. So, and then the other part of it is just as you're getting into your boat, so you've got your one support crew sitting behind you holding the spray deck, and you're getting your spray deck on. And then if whatever drink system you've got going on, make sure you check your hoses, make sure all that works. A few years ago, we were doing some filming around Braden Curry, who was leading the longest stay at one point, and his hoses, his drink system wasn't working. He actually stopped, they pulled the spray deck out, refigured it out, there was just a twist in the hose, and then he was off. If he had pushed off with it not working, well then an hour later he's going to be in trouble. So just make sure everything's fully sorted before you get on the river and push off and go and have a good paddle.
Yeah, and in the longest day, this is a key moment for a support crew to be making some decisions for you, because you're already a fair way into the race.
Could be pretty fatigued by that stage, maybe not making very good decisions either.
Correct. So your judgment of coming off being hot from the run and the bike and all that sort of stuff, a good time for the support crew to just maybe flex a little bit of authority and say, hey, no, actually, this is what's happening down there. You need to be wearing this.
This is what the weather's doing, and actually make those decisions and help you out with that. Because the time of the day is different. You're getting on at about lunchtime-ish.
Yeah.
So you kind of know. And generally, the easterly's building as you get down the river, so it's probably getting colder for you as you go on the river as well. So it's slightly different. So
And you've got your support crew there because you've trusted them. That's why you've chosen them. That's why they're there. And this is a key moment. You need to trust them.
And you've practiced this stuff before on the lawn at home as well. So it's not totally new. So then it's just about executing that plan.
Hello. So we're in the boat, we're pushed off in the water. Happy sailing.
Yeah, we're looking forward to paddling down the Waimakariri area.
All right, fresh back from dipping my toes in the river.
Yes.
You know, Rich, I've raced with you many times and we've been teammates many a times, and I've always thought you've had plenty of pulling power sitting on the front while I'm tucked in behind you on the bike. But man, you really showed your pulling power this time, and have you pulled it off with Steve Gurney?
Yeah, that's right. I am quite a big deal.
Note to self.
Exactly. No, it's great to have Steve on the program, and really looking forward to having a good chat with him and sharing his knowledge and experience.
Yeah. Righto. Well, no one wants to hear me, so let's see what Steve's got to say.
Let's get into it.
Hi team, I've got Steve Gurney with me. Steve Gurney, a bit of background, 9 times Coast to Coast Longest Day champion, ambassador of the Coast to Coast, so he loves spreading the word about the Coast to Coast, and he's the enthusiastic guy that you see at the finish line that you're looking forward to seeing as you cross that. Mental skills coach, he does a bunch of coaching, really specialising in the mental side of things, which is what we're going to talk today about today, Steve. Public speaker and adventurer, he's been around the world doing all sorts of crazy stuff, spreading the word that basically you can do whatever you put your mind to it, as long as you sort of throw yourself at it. Steve, awesome to be able to chat to you today, and looking forward to talking mental skills and everything Coast to Coast.
G'day, thanks for having me, looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. You must get a real kick out of seeing all these people cross the finish line.
Absolutely, Richard. You know, I remember when Judkins first asked me to help him shake hands at the finish line. This is the year after I stopped my professional racing. I thought, oh man, I'm going to be there till like the last competitor, you know, just before midnight, and I'm going to need lots of coffee. I don't know if I have the energy, I said to Juddy. And I was amazed, Richard. I couldn't sleep that night. I didn't have any coffees, and you just get this. You get this energy off people. Every person that comes to the finish line, you know, all the hundreds of them, near 1,000, the energy they exude, you never get sick of seeing that sense of satisfaction in their eyes. The race day, but the journey they've been through to get there and gathering the skills and the training and managing injuries and the threat of injuries. And it's an immensely satisfying thing to do that gives people a lot of energy.
Yeah, it's a big part of your February, isn't it? It's been part of your February for a number of years now.
It is. It's a highlight of the year. It's a highlight.
Yeah. Absolutely. So let's crack into it. Let's crack into things. I've got a few questions I've thrown together here around this, and I know that that you've worked together a lot with yourself in terms of racing and then working with others around these mental skills. Let's start at the top. Obviously, we're in a training phase now. People are getting prepared for Coast to Coast and thinking about that commitment to training. I think a lot of people are pretty committed, but what are some from a mental perspective, what are a couple of key sort of tips or things you would get people to think about in regards to training, getting up, turning up every day and preparing themselves for this race?
Yeah, so having trained for this for a few decades myself, I know what it's like. You know, comes this phase of the year where you really are starting to get into training in earnest. November, December, January are the you know, the the hard and fully committed months. And sometimes it just gets a bit too much. And you think, oh, can I really be bothered? Or it's not so much that, it's where am I going to find the energy to do this now? And the key for me is to get really connected to why you're doing this. You know, what's your why? Why did you choose to do this coast to coast? And that, and then take that to another level. How does this connect with my big why, my purpose on the planet? What's the purpose of my life kind of thing? You know, I know this is really esoteric, big, deep and meaningful questions, but this is actually the true source of intrinsic or internal motivation that'll enable you to get out and do those hardest sessions, you know, week after week after week. So long as you connect to that excitement that made you do this in the first place, and how is it going to make your life all the richer with having done this, and how's it going to make the lives of those around you, your family, your friends, the people you touch in your day-to-day life, how is it going to make you a better person for them as well?
Yeah, and that's something that I guess that you're thinking about while you're out there training, isn't it? But it's great stuff to be able to discuss with others that are close to you as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Some of those ideas with each other.
Yeah, it's a good point. Share it with those, you know, your wife or your partner or your husband or your children or, you know, those people who you deal with every day, so they understand why it is you've got this, why it's the new you. Mm. And they can create that space for that to, you know, allow you to be tired. And it's okay when you have to go out and do some training because they understand why you're doing it.
That's right. Exactly. And if everybody's in on it together, it makes it so much more. And obviously when you're doing the race, think of that. Think of them at the finish line. And it's amazing how much, both in training and also race day, that you deep you'll dig if you go back to that.
Yeah, I've seen, and I've actually, I coached a couple of people who are fathers, you know, and one of the issues you have, of course, is you end up with your partner being a widow or widower, you know, yeah, kind of thing, because you're all, you know, you hear of coast to coast widows because their husband's always out training or vice versa. And one way to get around that, and also with your kids, of course, is to involve them. Obviously on race day, they can have an important task of being your support crew, but also involve them so they feel like it's a team effort, not just your own.
Yes, yeah, no, good stuff. Along that, and coming along those same sort of lines, you raced at the top level 9 times. That's pretty amazing. Of winning the longest day coast to coast, you had a whole lot of people that were trying to knock you off your perch during your time. That commitment side of things and turning up to train and getting ready to race. How did you deal with that from your perspective, and what advice would you give to others in terms of just that repeated success, trying to be at the top level for more than being a one-hit wonder? How do I kind of repeat that, turn up again?
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be winning. It could be, how do you repeat your goal, whatever your goal is? And but let me give you the perspective from being, you know, the top, you know, the winner, and aiming to be that again next year and the year after as many years as I could. Yep. And it's understanding what the other people are trying to do. So I take what we call the underdog perspective. Yeah. So Sean Fitzpatrick, famous rugby player from years ago, had a saying, he trained as if he was number two. Okay. And what did he mean by that? So number two is the person who wants to be knocking you off your perch. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, it was some usually younger athlete who was coming through, you know, young, strong, keen, eager.
Yeah.
And you have to think, well, I have to put myself in their shoes and think, right, now what are they likely to be thinking? And how, what are they likely to be training? And how can I prepare for their onslaught? It's about how to, it's like a chess game. How can I prepare for their next move? Because I'm already ready for it. And so it's the trainers if you're number two. So another good example of this is Hertz and Avis. Those are two rental car companies. Hertz used to be the biggest in the USA by a long shot.
Yeah.
And Avis admitted this, and their slogan was, we're number two, so we try harder. So, you know, the surveys, it all said that Hertz is number one, Avis is number two. And this is the underdog principle in actual practice. So Avis said, well, because we're, it's a reframe, because we're number two, we are going to be trying harder to knock Hertz off their perch. And it's exactly the same for me. I had to train as if I was number two, so I trained harder than those others who were actually number two.
Because if
I was always one step ahead.
You get comfortable otherwise, don't you? You're like, oh yeah, I've got it. Oh, do I need to train that hard today? Do I need to get out of bed that early in the morning?
Yeah.
If you think you've got it and you're under control with it.
So put another way, it's an attitude. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset. And so you have to get yourself in the correct mindset, and without being, what's the word for it? You don't want to get too relaxed about it. You don't want to rest on your laurels, so to speak. You want to anticipate it like a chess game.
Yes, and that goes back to that why too, doesn't it? As you've just talked about in terms of why am I doing this? But that also leads.
I'll give you an example. Yep. Could I just give you an example?
Yes.
So we used to do these Monday sessions with John Hellermans at QE2 in Christchurch, and there was a whole lot of Ironman athletes and triathletes and coast to coast athletes. So there's, you know, it's a squad, a training squad, which would do running circuits. So we do. John was a very, very, very good coach, still is. But so we'd have circuits around a running track, and so we'd run a couple of laps around the grass or up around the bleachers on the outside, and then we'd do burpees or press ups or those sorts of things. I always thought, right, some of these guys in this group want to beat me.
Yeah.
So my attitude of train as a fun number two started there. I would always do one more at least burpee or press up or star jump than they did. So right from then, I'm playing that game. And you know, of course, they'd be seeing me. I'd be doing one more than them. And
did they see that? Did they?
Oh, absolutely. I made sure they saw it, because I wanted them to understand I am number one in every aspect. There was no way they mean.
Did they ever do one more back? Did that ever get to be a thing?
I didn't notice it.
Okay. Right. We didn't have a burpee off until midnight. Nothing like that.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, there wasn't room to do a whole lot of extra because you had to move on to the next thing. But,
yes,
you know, when I saw everybody had stopped, I'd stay back and just do one more and then catch them up. So that's the sort of attitude that champions have to have, that they're going to do 10% more than anyone else. Or and we don't want to do – it's not to be a quantity thing. It's got to be quality as well, of course. Yep. We don't want to overtrain. Yep. But it's just a bit – I'm just telling that story as an attitude, you know.
Yes.
If you're serious about staying on number one, staying on top, that's the sort of thing you have to do. You have to go to those lengths.
Yeah, brilliant. Standing on the start line, that's a big thing for a lot of us. As we stand on the start line, we've trained for a long, long time. We've put our bodies on the line, our families on the line. We've invested a lot of money into this. And the thing with the coast to coast is a lot of different things that can happen on race day. So how do you deal with, from your perspective, stand on the start line, I want to beat everybody else. There's a fair few nerves that can go on in that period. And how do you manage that rather than letting it get on top of you?
Good question. Really good question. Two answers that I've got. I just set the scene, if you like. On the start line of any coast to coast, any year, there's probably 10 guys in my category that have done the training, have the skills, have the ability to win. So any one of us 10 could win.
Yeah.
Who do you think wins? Of course, it's the one who wants to win the most. And so it's a psychology thing. And that's part of the dealing with the nerves is understanding everyone. You know, I can go along and look in the eyes of the, actually I do. I go and shake hands with those guys before the race starts.
Okay.
And wish them good luck, you know, as a good sportsman type thing.
Yeah.
And I look in their, part of it though, of course, is I'm looking in their eyes to see who really wants to win and who I, you can tell by the look in their eyes who your competition's going to be.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. It's about assessing who's there. But it actually starts, dealing with nerves on the start line actually starts the day I put my entry in, months beforehand.
Yes.
So when I put my entry into the race, or when I commit to doing it, that's the same day I type up a list on my computer, and sometimes it's pages long.
Mm-hmm.
I type up a list of everything that could possibly go wrong.
Okay.
In the race, you know, like a puncture, or the support crew vehicle running out of fuel, or a bad weather, or hot weather, or cold weather, or putting a hole in my kayak.
Yep.
So it's a quite a negative thing to, you know, not a negative, but it's quite an oppressive thing to do, overwhelming thing sometimes. You think, fuck, all these things that could go wrong is quite a mind-blowing thing.
Yeah.
But then the trick is then to say, righto, I have three columns. So the first column is all these things that could go wrong. Second column is preventions, and the third column is cures.
Yes.
So a prevention is better than a cure, of course. So the fence at the top of the cliff is better than the ambulance at the bottom.
Yep.
So first of all, I think about, okay, for example, putting a hole in my kayak, that's something, that's a challenge I don't want.
Yep.
How do I prevent it? Well, you can buy, there's many things. Okay, you might list off a whole lot of different things.
Yeah.
Buy a Kevlar kayak, go on that kayak skills course so you get more skills. Train on rivers that are harder than the coast to coast so that coast to coast rivers are easy. Practice on the course lots. yep. things like that. And of course, so that makes immediately makes me feel better. Oh shit, I've got a plan. You know, yeah, okay. Yes, and yes. I'm doing this months out, so I've got time to do this. This is also a stage where sometimes innovation comes in. I might be able to invent a little gadget or something, or invent some way of training that's going to be innovative and never thought of before, and yep. it's going to help prevent it. And of course, the cure column will be a roller of duct tape and that sort of thing. But the cure is no good because by then you've slowed down because your kayak's full of water. You have to pull over, empty yep. the boat out, dry it off, patch the. You've wasted half an yep. hour. Yep. So you don't want to use the cure column if you can help it, but sometimes you have to.
Yep.
So prevention is better.
Yep. And so it still allow you to win the race if need be, that cure column, depending on what happens. But it's still
that's
there.
That's right. I mean, yep. it may be that everybody has the same problem, but you've got the cure in your bag, no one else has.
Yep.
So the trick is doing this months out and then adding to it and refining it over the weeks and months means I can line up on the start line with an extra level of confidence, knowing I've done everything I possibly can to cover the possibilities of things going wrong. I know I still feel nervous. It's a natural reaction. In fact, if you're not feeling nervous on the start line, something's wrong.
That's
I'd
right.
say you haven't chosen a goal that's meaningful enough or challenging yeah. enough. And I think it's really normal. And you should celebrate and say, wow, great that I'm feeling nervous
yes.
because I'm doing something that's really worthwhile.
Yes,
and if,
yes.
if I'm not feeling nervous, I won't feel like it's important to me.
That's right. And that helps you cope with it, doesn't it? That it's normal.
And yeah. Normal. And you think about that the whole race through. You think, shit, this is good that it's challenging me. I'm really pleased that I'm feeling nervous about this rapid coming up. Or I'm feeling worried that I don't want to sprain my ankle on the run. Or I'm yeah. feeling nervous about the bunch crashing because I don't want to break my collarbone.
Yes.
And congratulate yourself and say, wow, that's good. My brain's working. And it's a goal that's really worthwhile doing. So well done.
So what you're saying is on the start line, it's about having a really good plan. And then therefore, if I've got that really good plan and I've prepared and I've organized for myself around those things, you can stand confidently with your chest out going, right, let's just go and challenge myself and see how I go at executing your plan. Would that be what you'd say?
Yeah, it's another way of saying it. Yeah. The plan though needs to have started well before the race.
Yeah.
Of course, months out.
Yeah, nice.
Now's the time. Actually, now's the perfect time. If you're listening to this, after you've finished listening to these gems and words of wisdom, sit down with your computer or a piece of paper and write everything, make a plan on how do you prevent things going wrong, and that'll give you an idea on what skills you need to work on, what equipment you need to go and buy or fix or invent. And, that's the plan we're talking about. Yes.
So in terms of that, we've talked about nerves on the start line and things, and sort of my next thing I'm quite keen to talk to you about was the dealing with adversity, which you've already sort of done, which is about planning and preparing. But the best thing about the coast to coast and the thing that keeps people coming back is that it's the mountains and it's the wilderness, and there's so many skills that you need and the stuff that just goes wrong that you might not have ever foreseen, and it's never happened before and it may never happen again. Mentally, how do you deal with that stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question again. And I've actually been talking about this a lot in my conferences lately to business, because yep. it's the same as life,
yep.
life never, ever, ever goes to plan. And if in our sport, if we want to have a sport or participate in a sport where things aren't likely to go wrong, we'll go and run around an athletics track, 400 yes. meters, because that's the closest you're going to get to managing or reducing the risk.
Yes.
So in the coast to coast or adventure racing, these sorts of triathlons, we do off-road multi-sport. It's in the wilderness and things will always go wrong. The mark of the winner, the person who's going to do well in the race or the person who's going to achieve their goals, are the ones who bounce back and are innovative and adaptable and deal with that adversity as it happens.
Yeah.
And let's reframe this. Coast to coast is dangerous. No one's died in that race yet, but people have died in similar things.
Yeah.
You could drown. You could crash off the bike and knock your head out, knock your head or break your neck or whatever,
yeah.
brain damage. You could trip over in the mountain run and drown as your foot got trapped. Or, things can go really badly wrong. You can break your bones. You can smash your bike up. You can smash
Okay, stuff. That's enough of that, Steve. Yep.
Okay. No one can
keep going. Yeah, no, you've got a lot of this.
You think, fuck, things are going to, why are we doing this? But yep. let's turn the corner and say, that's why we love it. That's
yes.
why we love this race, because we have to be adaptable, reliable, and we have to get the skills, and we can we're looking forward to that time in the future when we're standing on the finish line, we turn around and look back at where we've come from and say, yes,
yes,
I survived all those risks, all those challenges, and I did it my own way. I did it with my own responsibility, my own intelligence.
Yep, so embracing challenge is what you're saying, isn't it? Actually embrace that, walk towards it rather than being afraid of it.
Yeah, so how do you deal with adversity? Is by a frame of mind. It's about accepting it and dealing with it and bouncing back from it and being prepared.
And therefore, you're not going to get nervous or worried or upset or try and rush. Like often when something goes wrong, you like try and fix it quickly and then throw back in and then it's worse again. But actually, the emergency services say fast is slow and slow is fast. It's the same sort of saying.
Repairing a puncture, you know, if you've got a puncture in the race, you got your tube there. If you just whack it back in a hurry and you pinch it, well, oh man, it's going to take three times because you have to go and fix that tube hole. So take your time, do it properly so it's reliable. And we know that if you have put new tires and new tubes on and your bike's in good condition, then everyone faces the same risk. It's just, and if you've got a puncture, there's a good chance the person ahead of you is going to get a puncture as well. Yep. Actually, that was one of the things that drove me on. In the Coast to Coast, you know, I'd often be in second place. Yes, until the last few hours, you know,
from your kayaking strength. And
I used to worry about it. Yeah, well, it wasn't so much kayaking strength. It's just that I had all my skills the same level, but that's a whole new subject. But yes, the point that drove me on is, you know, I remember one year Richard Usher was leading me until the last, it was in Christchurch City outskirts, and I passed him. But what kept driving on, you know, I could have eased off into the headwind across the Canterbury Plains, but no, I kept driving on at race pace, mm-hmm. knowing that it's not over till the fat lady sings. Knowing that, you know, I'd had a bit of tape came off my leg and got stuck in my chain and had to stop and fix it. But the same thing could happen to him, or he'd get a puncture, or he could hit the wall and run out of energy. So you've got to understand that everybody in the race has the same level of risk and adversity. It just strikes at different times. So you've got to race your race, not someone else's race.
Yeah. How do you concentrate for long periods of time? Like you've talked a lot about, there's lots of different stuff that can go wrong. And how do you make sure you stay on, you say switch on over that period of time?
Good question. There's lots of different techniques, but my main one is staying connected to my reason I'm doing it, my why. What is my why? And so I'd actually write that on the deck of my kayak and on tape on the handlebars of my bikes, just to remind myself. And one of my favorite sayings is, energy flows where attention goes. So if you're focused on the negativity and worrying about getting a puncture or worrying about cramping, that's where your energy goes and you're bringing on the chance of it actually happening.
Yep.
Whereas if you're focusing on your energy your focus is going on the reasons you love doing it, and you're saying a cheerful hello to people as you're passing them, and you're waving to the spectators on the side of the road, cheering people along on the last bike leg. You know, if your attention's going to fun, that's where your energy goes as well, and that's a way more powerful place to be.
That's right. You can push yourself a whole lot harder, can't you, if you're in that positive frame of mind rather than trying to think about the seat that's sore or how much I'm hurting right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, chafing is a good one. So we're talking mostly about that last bike leg, aren't we? Because that's the fourth discipline. You know, we've got run, bike, kayak, and then we've got perseverance or mental state for that last headwind, you know? And I think it's really important to hone your mental skills here and focus on the fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So keeping that's in training and also racing and making sure that you remember why you're doing it and really enjoy it. Enjoy this thing because this might be something that you only ever do once. So let's make the most of this experience.
Yeah, no regrets. You don't want to finish with regrets saying, I should have gone harder there. Or I should have concentrated a bit harder so I didn't fall out of my kayak. You know, you want to stand on that finish line saying, I couldn't have done it any different. I've made the right decision. The other thing that I think about too, we're on the subject of fun, is I see occasionally you see athletes come into a transition. They've had a really bad mountain run, for example, and they're grumpy as hell with their support crew.
Yeah,
that's a really bad state to be in because it puts the, you know, first of all, it's rude. The support crew have given up their time. You want to treat them nicely, but more importantly, it puts the support crew in a negative state of mind as well. And that bounces back at you later on. We'll come and get you. Karma will come and get you. You need to come into a transition having a big smile on your face, even if you have to pretend, because that puts the support crew in the right state of mind to be happy and fun and positive as well. the support crew, to be honest, they are worried as hell that they're going to stuff up your race by doing something wrong. Yep. So you want to make sure the support crew have the most support they can from you as well, you know, the mental support. So I think it's important as an athlete to ensure that you create an atmosphere of fun for your whole team.
That's right, because they only see you at moments during the whole race, don't they? And then they're off in the mountains and away you go again. So if you could be having fun as soon as you left 10 minutes later, but they only remember that little moment that they're with you through the transition. Yes. So that affects their whole, yes, whole race and the weekend, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm guilty of this. I remember, you know, back in my days, there was a year where I was, well, a couple of races actually, where I was really bad, in a bad mood, and it was a disaster. So it's actually really important.
Yeah. But that's part of learning, isn't it? Part of learning. And and as we do that, we get better and reflect on it and do things better in the future. So just to sum up, Steve, what would you say are one or two key things that maybe we haven't covered so much that you want to make sure that you really get across about from the mental skills perspective of turning up and doing the Kathmandu Coast to Coast?
Okay, so one thing we haven't covered is practice. Practice your transitions. Never use anything new on race day, so you've practiced it. Get your support crew along for a barbecue or something like that. Practice out on the grass. You don't have to do it on the river and stuff like that. You can just lay all your gear out on the backyard and pretend you've come off the run and you're getting on your bike and you're putting your shoes on. You just ride around the grass, get off again, pretend you're getting into the kayak and you know, you've run down the gravel road. So you know what I mean. Practice the transitions.
Yep.
And there's a lot of resource on the coasttocoast.co.nz website in terms of, there's a plane taking off, I hope you can hear. The website has those sorts of notes. You can print them off and make them your own, you change them around, edit them and make them your own notes for your own crew, put your own times and stuff in there.
So that just helps you feel more prepared and confident about what you're going to be doing.
Crew. Yep. Gives the support crew confidence too, which is really important.
Yep.
I think to summarize, the most important thing is attitude can overcome anything, you know, and in fact, attitude can prevent bad things as well as creating good results. And I think that little saying, energy flows where attention goes, applies so much in training as well. Even, you know, coming home at night and thinking about the race, you think about it in a positive way, how it links to your why.
Yes. Yeah. Just like that. That's a great way to finish. Brilliant, Steve. Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Awesome. I love
your
it.
Words of wisdom. We could talk about, as we were preparing for this, we could how many hours have you got spare? We could talk about this for days, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah. And so could you, mate. There's a lot of wisdom here. So all the best, everybody, and make sure you have fun.
Brilliant. Okay. Well done. Thanks, Steve. Cheers.
Yeah, bye.
I know you loathe me to say this, Richard, but good chat.
Good chat, yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, great to have a good chat to Steve. He's always a good man to talk to, and loves this race and loves sharing and helping people.
There's nobody, maybe Robin Judkins, the man himself, but you know, really, there's nobody more passionate about this race than Steve Gurney.
100%. I was just actually looking through a book of like a pictorial book from the 80s, 90s, it was published in about 2008, of all the different photos the other day. And you're sporting a pretty good moustache, but I think Steve back in the day had a better one. with the zero helmet, with no padding in back in the day, and the gear. It's just fantastic stuff.
You know, listening to Steve there, and I hear him talk about, you know, the family and the old multi-sport widow and those sort of things. And he's very, very right there that you know, I think about if you're doing one day, 2 days, whatever, as an individual, you know, the title is individual, but it's such a team race.
Yep.
And it's a team race on the day with your support crew and all of that. But, you know, for you to get to the start line, the biggest team that you've got is your family back at home.
Yeah, 100%. So communicating with them about your training and things like that. But as I loved how Steve said, like, just get them involved. They're part of it. They're into it as well. Obviously on the race day, but in some form of training and things like that, that's super, super important too. So.
And I think if anybody's good at that, you are, Richard. I've seen the way you juggle your training, the coaching of everybody else, and your half a rugby team that you've got at home.
Yeah, getting the kids out, and they keep me honest, especially if Bella comes out on the bike with me. It's tough to keep up with her. And you're not running very fast, Dad. Oh, I'm trying over here. So yeah, it makes a big difference, eh?
Yeah, so you know, there's all, you know, those key things that sometimes just go past, you know, go through to the gatekeeper, and you just
You just don't think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's I think that's awesome. So good for us just to keep reminding ourselves of that going forward as well. And I think come race day and come our training and things like that, in terms of how Steve talked about, energy flows where attention goes. So if you focus on something that's bad, if you focus on something that's sore, if you focus on something that's gone wrong or all that sort of stuff, well, hey, that's where the attention's going to go and you're not going to be going as good as you can. So reframing that, he talked about attitude a lot, talked about just that whole self-talk thing. How do we actually talk to ourselves and the words that go on in our head? So I think that's, again, just one of those really sort of key bits to remind ourselves of, so then we can actually perform to our potential of what we're actually trained to do for the race.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, that's episode 6.
Yep,
I'm hoping our podcast is starting to peak like all the athletes are out there. I'm ready for taper week.
yeah, it's been big, but no, it's going good, eh? Enjoying it.
It's really good. All right, so that's us. We'll be back with episode 7. Until then, high spread five. The awesomeness.
Yep, good job.
And a high five.